What field do most prospective MBAs want to go into? According to GMAC's recent prospective applicant survey, 37% of all MBA wannabes are aiming for a post-MBA career in financial services. And that's the biggest group, by the way. But how do you get there? That's exactly what we're going to discuss with our guest in this, our 55th segment of Admission Straight Talk. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of Admission Straight Talk. Now, some of you may be wondering why I said 55th, because some of the more recent episodes actually had higher numbers. We had some scheduling issues, and that's why it's the 55th segment. Before we turn to how to transform yourself into a Wall Street whiz, I want to introduce you to a special report at Accepted that collates information from leading MBA programs that have strength in financial services. The report, MBA Insight, Focus on Finance, presents the courses, extracurricular activities, and relevant hiring companies for business schools that place significant numbers of graduates in financial services. The report is free, and we'll link to it from the show notes at info.accepted.com/55. I also want to remind you of a new feature on Admission Straight Talk. We invite your questions. If you have an admissions-related question, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/55, and you will see a widget that will allow you to leave an audio message in which you can ask a question. You can speak using your computer, mic, your phone, whatever your pleasure. You can also send me questions via good old-fashioned email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. Now to today's show and guest, Arkady Liebman of Wall Street Pep. Arkady graduated from Bowdoin College and started at J.P. Morgan in 2000. He then moved to FBR Capital Markets, where he focused on energy and natural resources before joining Wall Street Prep in 2005. At Wall Street Prep, Arkady has co-authored much of Wall Street Prep's training materials, conducted training for many of Wall Street Prep's corporate clients, including FBR Capital Markets, Rosetta Resources, and RBC Capital, as well as for several top business schools. He is also the co-author of Crash Course in Accounting and Financial Statement Analysis, published by Wiley & Sons. Given the interest in Wall Street among college students, recent college grads, and MBA applicants and students, I'm ecstatic he's agreed to speak with us and share his expertise. Arkady, thank you once again for joining me on the Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's a pleasure being here with you.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about Wall Street Prep and its origins, as well as what it provides today?
Sure. So as you pointed out, I started right from undergrad at investment banking at J.P. Morgan, then went over to equity research, did it for 5 years, and realized that while I liked crunching numbers, I didn't really particularly like the lifestyle and wanted to do something else, and obviously could have gone to business school, could have gone to and pursued buy-side opportunities, but instead decided to join my good friend and former colleague in starting Wall Street Prep with the goal of helping students prepare for investment banking and finance careers. I found myself, when I was going into investment banking, I had no idea what it meant. It was just, it sounded great. Many of my friends were doing it, were pursuing internships and full-time positions, so I kind of went along with them. And so I thought that it would be great to get students prepared for the daily realities of what they'd be doing. So that's how we started about 10 years ago, and we started providing self-study programs, which we still do to this day, albeit they're better looking, and of course they've kept up with technology, and are now our courses are video driven, and then of course the last 10 years have branched out into live training. So we actually conduct instructor led seminars at universities, both undergraduate, MBA, and FIN programs, and then we also do seminars at various financial institutions, investment banks, consulting firms, and Fortune 1000 companies around the world.
That's great, and. Did you see a lack of training materials available to students? Is that kind of what motivated you to enter this market?
Exactly. When I was getting into investment banking, I didn't really understand what I'd be doing. It sounded great. The perception was that you'd be meeting with CEOs and CFOs and networking with them and giving them big strategic advice, and you didn't really realize that for the first few years, at least, you'd actually be doing a lot of number crunching and analytical work. And really, there weren't services out there that taught you what investment banking was all about. There were some courses that allowed you to prepare for interviews and ace the technical questions, but no one actually showed you, you know, here's what you'd be doing on a daily basis. Let's run through a case study. And I thought it'd be really cool to do that, because a lot of my colleagues when I joined had the same thought as what exactly are we going to be doing. And in fact, several of them quit within 3 to 4 months because they realized that the glamorous lifestyle and the type of work they'd be doing, or they thought they'd be doing, actually was 3 to 5 to 10 years away, and they didn't want to wait that long and do the heavy analytical work that was required of us analysts.
Okay. Now, many of our listeners are considering different career options and educational options. If someone wants to go into financial services, what are the skills employers want to see for some of the different kinds of positions on Wall Street? Let's start with investment banking.
I think financial institutions want to hire students who are analytical and quantitative and hardworking. I think that's a given. But increasingly, they're looking for individuals who can demonstrate a passion for finance. And I think, you know, given our track record of working with hundreds of undergraduate MBA programs the last 10 years, I think actually expectations of recruiters have gone up. 10 years ago, you could have tried to find your way to an investment-making interview and pass and get accepted without really showing that you had the hands-on skills, the hands-on modeling skills. Now I think recruiters want people who can demonstrate right away that they understand what they're getting into, and they've taken the initiative to obtain those skills before the interview. So I think that's, you know, I think that's something for individuals to consider, is make sure that they're well prepared from not just kind of theory perspective, but also just hands-on perspective, and you know, they've done type of analysis they'd be doing beforehand, whether it's through our seminars, through academic coursework, or in prior internships. But I think ultimately, for institutions are looking for well-rounded individuals. The behavioral side of interviews is just as important as the analytical side, and a lot of interviewers, you know, may spend most of the interviews chatting about qualitative aspects of the interview to understand, is that the kind of person I want to work with when I do hire him?
Okay, that's an excellent answer. Thank you. Do you think the Great Recession had something to do with the increased demands on or increased expectations, shall we say, of recruiters?
I think it has, but I think I think it has to do with the fact that recruiters now are more selective. I think now you look at investment banks, look at financial institutions, they're now casting a wider net. It's no longer the top 10 programs that they go to. They now cast a wider net, and you know, even if you're going to lower tier school, you can still make your way to investment banking. And so, with them casting a wider net, they're now, the expectations are higher that whoever they're interviewing, they want to make sure that person understands what they're getting into and has the skill set to contribute. I think that's especially true when you look at institutions that, when I joined JP Morgan, we had an 8-week training program. So you could have, you know, you had liberal arts students like myself, you had undergraduate business students, you had MBAs in a simultaneous track, and everyone was taught the same thing. Now those training programs are cut back, you know, from 8 weeks to 4 to 3 weeks. And so with these training programs, onboarding training programs, getting smaller and smaller, the expectations are that whoever is hired can hit the ground running immediately. There's no longer this 8-week training program, or even, you know, in the past it was a year-long training program a couple of decades ago. That's no longer the case. So recruiters are being more selective now.
That makes perfect sense. Who should not seek a position on Wall Street? And here I'm asking more about personality and character traits than hard skills or raw talent. And conversely, what personality types thrive?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think it comes down to understanding what you'd be doing on the job. So if you're going to investment banking, you need to understand that for the first few years, it's a lot of analytical, quantitative work. And so the people, if a person doesn't like that type of work, if they're more of a big strategy type of person, if they want to focus more on marketing, if they love sales aspect, then of course that's, going to investment banking initially maybe not the way for them, is not the right track for them. In fact, you know, from my experience, you know, the analysts who you could argue were the worst at what they were doing actually could have become really great senior investment bankers, because at that level it's very much about relationship building, it's about networking and so forth. And so they were great at that kind of soft, intangible aspect. They were not good at, you know, being detail oriented, right, and making sure that there were no mistakes in presentations and so forth. So I think it has to do with, you know, coming back to understanding what you're getting into, and are those the skills that you have that you want to develop, or not. And I also one thing to point out is to keep in mind that do I want to do this for 2 to 3 years?
Right.
So even though the job goes from more of an analytical to more, you know, relationship building and relationship management, it takes years to see that change of perspective when mm-hmm. it comes to the position. And some students may not want to put in 5 to 10 years to get to the level to do something that they actually are truly passionate about.
Right. That makes sense. Now, you spent approximately 4.5 years working for J.P. Morgan and then at FBR Capital Markets, focusing on oil and refining. You've been working for Wall Street Prep since 2005. You clearly have a profound knowledge of Wall Street and what it wants from its employees. If you had one piece of advice for someone considering a career on Wall Street, or at least starting their career on Wall Street, what would it be?
It's tough to boil it down to one piece of advice.
Okay, we can stretch that to two or three.
We'll take one piece of advice and divide a couple of different parts.
Okay.
I think one is, if you're a student, you want to start early. What that means is that it's a lot of students, and we do training at so many graduate programs, MBAs and Master of Finance. I see students coming in without realizing that if they want to get into finance field, they have to start in the fall of their first year as an MBA. And that's a hard pill to swallow, because they're just getting oriented. They're on a new campus, and all of a sudden they need to get back. They need to get into the swing of recruiting. And so I think students who are most successful making transition from non-financial services to financial services and using, you know, the grad school to do that, I think they start early, even before the MBA starts, to identify
right.
what steps do I need to take.
Right. Well, my position is that they need to know what they want to do before they start applying.
Exactly. If they're waiting to start business school and go through the first year to figure out what they're doing, they're going to miss the boat.
Exactly.
And with financial institutions now looking at internships as really as a stepping stone to full-time positions. Most institutions, if you talk to them, they say that 75 to 85% of their full-time class is determined at the end of the summer.
Right.
They extend all the offers, and so they only have a small number of positions left. And so if you're coming back second year and you had an internship somewhere that you didn't like because you didn't start it early, you'll find yourself at a disadvantage. So Like you mentioned, Linda, the goal is to start early, and before you come into a grad program, try to do a lot of due diligence, start networking, start putting together your resume, and so forth. So I would say that's the first piece of advice. And then the second part is, I think, take a broad view. I think a lot of students come in and they look at investment banking as, you know, as an umbrella of various positions, without realizing that if you're looking at a financial institution, investment banking is just one type of, you know, one branch, one vertical. The investment banking provides financing advice and capital raising advice to clients. But there are other verticals within an investment bank, within a financial institution, whether it's risk management, whether it's investment management, whether it's private equity within a large bank. And so a lot of folks may not be looking at the opportunities holistically. They're just focusing on one vertical within financial services without realizing that there's so many other opportunities out there, not to mention that a lot of, you know, I would say virtually all Fortune 500 companies have phenomenal post-grad finance programs. A lot of them are rotational, a lot of them are multi-year, a lot of them have pretty senior exposure to a lot of senior management. So these are building blocks to moving on within those organizations. And so having, you know, understanding that there are finance positions with, you know, outside of financial institutions,
sure.
That's something that students need to keep in mind when they're looking at getting into financial services.
Are the hours less grueling in those positions?
I think typically they are. I mean, outside of financial institutions, if you're talking about going and working for Google and working in their corporate development group or merger and acquisitions group or corporate strategy group, the hours are better. There's better work-life balance. So I think that's an additional advantage of going to work for large non-financial services corporations is work-life balance typically tends to be better. The work tends to be less cyclical as well.
Okay. Now, many times I'm asked.
But the pay may be less.
True. Well, there is that trade-off. There is that trade-off.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you kind of alluded to this in your last response, but I want to, you know, you talked about Masters of Finance, MBA, and there's also Masters of Financial Engineering. Can you give an overview? What are some of the differences in those degrees and the positions they lead to?
Sure, that's a pretty relevant question because we're working with increasingly more and more master's programs, and many of them are just starting up or have started over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the primary difference depends on how deep into finance you want to get. I think, you know, if you want to stay within investment banking and corporate finance roles, I think MBA is still the best strategy for you as a student. Go to MBA, get a 2-year degree, use an internship as a way to test financial services, and then get a full-time job in investment banking. But if you want to do more quantitative stuff, you know, whether it's quantitative trading or risk management, I think that's when Masters in Finance and financial engineering programs really come in handy because you really get into a lot of theoretical work that, you know, investment bankers are not really doing. This is more done by their peers in quant groups. And I think one other thing that I noticed, too, is that there's also an age difference. When it comes to Masters in Finance programs specifically, I've noticed that many of them are increasingly getting students to apply directly from undergrad. So if you're looking at an incoming class, it's, you know, 80% could be students who have no full-time experience before grad school versus an MBA, as we know, you know, it takes 2-3 years minimum before trying to get into an MBA program. So I think that's also a difference. And I think lastly is that if someone is looking for a quick graduate school study, master of finance programs are typically 1 year versus 2 years. So again, it's a quicker way to get some financial skills under your belt and be ready for financial services. In fact, I know one individual I've kept in touch with post our undergrad seminar who went from undergrad to master's in finance program and now got a job at an investment bank as an analyst, but that was the way for him to be competitive and get a job is to get the 1-year program under his belt.
It's also just much less expensive. I mean, out-of-pocket opportunity costs are just much reduced. And because it's done earlier in one's career, it's again, there's savings. It's not just that it's 1 year versus 2 years. It's that you're earning less at that point in your career.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Now, we've also kind of touched on this, but Wall Street is notorious for insane hours. You referred to it yourself about, you know, the lifestyle issues when you decided to leave Wall Street. And last summer, a 21-year-old Bank of America intern, Moritz Erhardt, died after working till 5 a.m. the day before and after certain, you know, repeatedly long hours. Now, some banks then began to require a minimum amount of time off. Specifically, Bank of America Merrill Lynch started to require its young analysts to take 4 weekend days off per month. Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, and J.P. Morgan have announced similar initiatives. Do you think this is meaningful, that it'll stick, or is the culture of Wall Street too wedded, and financial services in general, wedded to the kind of macho long hours for these reforms to take place? Or are they really just shifting the work to the work week as opposed to the weekend?
Yeah, this topic has been the subject of much discussion over last year since, obviously, the tragic events that happened last summer. I think in my view, I think right now it most likely is cosmetic change. Like you mentioned, I think giving weekends off but then shifting more work to weekday, I think likely is the immediate outcome. So unfortunately, immediately we're not going to see much difference. But I think longer term, investment banking has to change if they want to continue retaining folks. And I think that's what we've noticed is I think investment banking right now is currently at a standstill, and they have to make tough choices because in the past, if you're an MBA, typically investment banking paid you the most. And so it was very easy as an MBA to make the decision to go into investment banking because you come out of MBA and you know you could earn $200,000 two, 3 years out. You could earn $300,000-$400,000. Right
you
now,
pay off your debt and you go do what you want. Basically, you work
exactly,
really hard for a couple years.
Right, but no, so investment banking in the past used to be able to come in and say, look, we're going to pay the most, here are the expectations, but of course now MBA students are looking not just investment banking, they're looking at private equity, they're looking at investment management, going working for hedge funds,
right,
and going working for large mutual funds, and the salaries there are very similar. So compensation gap now has been closed, and those other firms, you know, private equity firms, investment management firms, are coming in and saying, look, you know, this is a way for you to build your career. It's not just 2-3 years that you're doing it, and then you're going to get tired of it because of the lack of the work-life balance. If you're going working for us, you're going to have a work-life balance, especially when it comes to investment management firms or hedge funds. Is they're market-driven. Is when the markets are closed, you know, you can only do, you know, so much when, you know, on the weekends and so forth. So,
right.
So I think that's an issue that investment banking has to deal with is competition from other financial services. And I think just as big of a competition that they're facing is non-financial services.
Right.
I mean, we see, you know, I talk to a lot of MBA students who are evaluating not just investment banking, but hey, I want to go work for Google. I want to go work for Facebook. I want to go work for Twitter. You know, I can be doing a lot of interesting work. I can be working, doing finance-related activities. I can get paid pretty well. My work-life balance is phenomenal. My benefits are phenomenal. Whether you talk about free lunches or free laundry, et cetera. And then, of course, longer term, there's that potential of joining a startup at its initial phase and doing really well.
Right.
You know, given the stock options and so forth. So I think investment banking, beyond just this stage of giving weekends off, has to look hard and try to figure out what is the best way to compete. And I think longer term for investment banking to continue to attract talent, I think the work-life balance has to change. And I think it should because I think majority of of grueling hours is really FaceTime. It's not about, you know, deals coming together last minute. I think it'll happen from time to time. And I think everyone who's involved in a big deal is happy to work hard. But if most of the time you're in the office late because of FaceTime, because everyone else is doing it, then I think that's not a good thing. So, I'm hoping that, you know, some banking will change, but it'll take time. So I think this is the step. I think this is a baby step in
okay.
the right direction.
Yeah.
But I think the focus will have to be on, you know, how do we attract folks, and not just compensation wise, because it's no longer the big carrot for investment banking versus other industries. It's how do we also make work life balance better, and how do we also retain folks? Because you see a lot of movement, you know, of people, you know, associates coming in post MBA. Doing 2-3 years and then moving to private equity, moving to
right.
investment management, moving to Fortune 100 company where they, you know, they work in corporate development but with better hours and at a higher level. And so I think, you know, so the two issues is how do we attract the best talent, and then how do we retain it? And I think we've seen, at least from my experience, we've seen a lot of our clients, both new and existing, turn to us for continuing education help. We have, you know, state-of-the-art learning management system, e-learning courses, and they're realizing that it's not just enough to give new hires training, we also need to keep the training going so that, you know, we need to give them opportunities to learn on the job when they have free time. And so they're turning to us and using and leveraging our e-courses to give access to their employees. So again, that's also a small step. So all of this has to come together for investment banking, I think, to compete longer term for talent.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I think it's, you can just give it economics. Obviously, if you can exploit certain workers, then there's, you know, you pay less. Okay, that's part of it. But I think it's probably more, it's probably also a cultural issue. You know, the people running Wall Street have been doing this way for a long time. Perhaps they put in grueling hours when they were young, and why can't the young people do it today? You know, this kind of stuff.
You're absolutely right. It is. I've done it, so others should be able to do it. I agree with you. That's why I think, you know, it's not going to be an overnight change. I think it'll have to be gradual, but obviously it should be, you know, hopefully it'll be soon enough, especially with, you know, with them, with investment banks looking at PR-related issues stemming from, you know, this unfortunate experience last summer, and looking at where and being right. Going elsewhere and saying, how do we retain those folks? Because we, you know, anecdotally, I've seen some firms, and I've had friends who are senior positions saying that they've had experiences where it was tough to compete. That the level of interest of them going to the alma maters and being able to recruit was much, you know, was way less than they expected, and it was disappointing. And I think it has something to do with the perception of you know, work life balance, longer term opportunities, and other sectors that I think are offering pretty amazing opportunities as well.
Great. A survey by the MBA Career Services and Employers Alliance found that roughly 42% of the responding business schools reported increased full-time recruiting from financial services. Do you see similar trends in hiring on Wall Street for both MBA and undergrad? Is the street recovering from the Great Recession?
I think on one hand, the street has definitely recovered. I think the financing activities, the capital markets,
right,
are doing well. I think companies, given how much cash they now have, they're looking for mergers and acquisitions. You've seen some pretty large deals.
Sure, just this week.
Last year, exactly. You know, and so I think that I think the industry is getting back its health. I think the big issue, as we just discussed, is the competition from outside the financial services. Continue to attract top talent that's also considering startups, technology, and non-financial services on the same level that hasn't happened before.
Got it. Now, you have authored and co-authored a lot of Wall Street Prep's training material for individuals, top business schools, including Wharton, MIT Sloan, Tuck, INSEAD, London Business School, and Michigan Ross, as well as financial firms. What distinguishes your approach to financial training and modeling?
I think, you know, when we look at what MBA programs teach, I think some do a very good job of providing solid accounting and finance foundations. Others, and again, it really depends on professors, others do an okay job. But I think in general, students are interested in learning what they'll be doing on the job. So it's not just enough for them to learn about accounting theory. They want to know what will I be doing when I join investment banking, when I join a private equity firm, how do I get prepared? And I think that's what led to us being so successful and going to so many different schools, is that, you know, we bridge the gap between what students learn in school with what they'll be doing on the job. So bridging the gap between theory and practice, and really give students, you know, a good idea of, you know, what knowledge do you need to succeed, and what knowledge you're learning that, you know, it's good to know, but really it's never going to be used in practice, is it? So I think that's what differentiates us from kind of accounting theory that students learn in the classroom.
It's a very practical focus, then.
Exactly. It's very practical, and it's very hands-on. So, you know, when it comes to our seminars, for example, students are learning by doing. So, you know, they bring their laptops, and everything we teach them, it's not lecture style. It's hands-on Excel work. And I think even though I think a lot of schools now have adjunct professors and other in other individuals who are increasingly looking to teach these hands-on courses. In fact, we have partnerships with a lot of schools, you know, where we work with professors who use our materials to teach their courses. I think business schools are still focused on theory, and yeah, they focused on, you know, general management. And they don't really go into the level of detail that we do to equip students with, you know, with the hands-on skills that they need immediately.
Okay, great. Now, Wall Street Prep also provides interview preparation courses to prepare applicants applying for jobs at financial services firms. Can you provide a few top tips for Wall Street interviews or financial services interviews? What can an interviewee expect? What is distinctive about a Wall Street interview? I mean, everybody knows with consulting firms, it's case interviews. So
right.
What's distinctive about financial services?
I think, you know, I think what's distinctive in a Wall Street interview, at least, you know, when you're applying for corporate finance and investment banking positions, is when it comes to technical aspect of interviews, typically there is one correct answer. So if someone walk me through a cash flow statement or, you know, how do you value a company, there's one right answer and there are a lot of wrong answers. Versus in consulting, the interviewer just wants to see your train of thought.
You
may get to the wrong answer, but you might have the right approach. Same thing with marketing. Someone just may want to see how creative you are. They don't really care about the end result. In Wall Street interviews, the technical aspect has a correct answer. And so one advice I've always told students, and we do a lot of technical interview prep at a number of different business schools and grad schools, including masters in finance, is just make sure to know the technical side, because it's easy to know that there's a correct answer. And so if you conceptually understand what the interviewer is asking and you understand how to answer the question, that's an easy part of an interview to ace. That should be an easy checkbox for you to check off. I think that the other thing to consider about Wall Street interviews is a lot of them are behavioral. And I think a lot of students also miss that walking in, as they don't realize that Wall Street has a lot of open-ended questions. So an interviewer can ask them about strengths and weaknesses and so forth that an interviewer may not have prepared for. So typically, the successful interviews are those that prepare for both technical and behavioral sides and, you know, can answer technical questions well and ace those, but at the same time are not paralyzed by these open-ended behavioral questions that they haven't prepared for.
So they want to see people who can talk as well as people who can add, who can calculate.
Well, exactly.
Calculate and communicate.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Calculate and communicate. And a big part of interviews, of course, is that the interviewer is trying to figure out is, do I want to work with this person?
That's true at every interview.
And we're working long hours. It is, but especially in investment banking, when the hours are so long, when you're working 90 to 100 hours, And a lot of times it's, you know, you work in the trenches, and sometimes you want to make sure that whoever you hire and you work with, that person is reliable and also fun to work with, because you don't want to work with people that you don't really, you know, like, especially that, you know, especially for 90 hours to 100 hours.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Any last words of advice for someone considering a career on Wall Street?
Pieces of advice. I mean,
you've given a lot already, just, so this,
you know,
is this is really just like a cherry on top.
Yeah. I would tell students to be prepared. Again, I think the expectations of recruiters and firms now are much higher than they used to be, partially because of firms like ours, who I think do a great job of getting students prepared and ready to go. I think start early. Don't wait to get to grad school to start applying for jobs, especially when it comes to master's in finance 1-year programs. Those programs are so accelerated that every single day, every single hour of those days, I feel like is filled with some activities. And I think be open to opportunities. As I mentioned, there are a lot of great finance-related opportunities, not just within financial institutions, but also in Fortune 1000 companies, as well as non-investment banks. There are a lot of firms now that exist that may not have existed or may not have been big enough to hire 10 years ago that are not pure, you know, they're not pure investment banks, but they do a lot of interesting work in financial services that, you know, you want to consider. For example, you know, a company like BlackRock or PIMCO that I think are large and have great opportunities for someone. But those firms are not, you know, are not investment banks when you think of investment banks like JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, those are the pieces of advice I would provide. But I think lastly, I would say a lot of it depends on networking, because with many firms now casting a wider net than ever, I think students from many different grad schools have an opportunity now to get into financial services that opportunity may not have existed, you know, 10 years ago, but it does. But the way to get in is, of course, to get on the radar of recruiters is through networking. So I think, you know, a lot of students need to embrace, you know, whether it's LinkedIn or other, you know, non-standard ways of getting in front of recruiters. So that's part of the strategy of starting early and thinking about how to approach the opportunities and how within each opportunity, how to approach each firm and maximize the level of success that those students will have.
Thank you. Sounds like they have to do some homework, basically. They have to prepare themselves.
It always comes down with homework, right?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, homework, and of course, step zero is, do I want to go into financial services, right? That's the first part of homework. But again, that's where services like ours come in. We, you know, we see a lot of students outside of universities just on their own enroll in our self-study programs. The programs that we've started with, we continue selling them in a different format, of course. But, you know, these students are taking the initiative to learn about the hands-on skills that they need to pursue finance careers. They're doing it on their own, and that's part of the homework, because if you can go through this and you really enjoy the self-study course, then most likely you'll enjoy the analytical aspects of financial services and investment banking career. So that's so step one, or I say step zero, is do some homework. And, of course, if they want to check out our products, they're always available on our website as well.
Well, that kind of leads me to asking you. The time is just about up. I'm really sorry because I've enjoyed the call. Where can listeners learn more about your work and Wall Street Prep? And how about your book, Crash Course in Accounting and Financial Statement Analysis? Where can they learn about it?
All of them, Linda, are available on our website. So anyone who's interested in our self-study courses, they can go to wallstreetprep.com. We have self-study courses available. We have live seminars in various cities that a lot of students also use as a great way to get up to speed on you know, on the skills that they need before internships. So we have a lot of courses coming up over the next 3 months. And of course, we have a blog on our site that's regularly updated, that has great interview tips, that have quick lessons in modeling that students can go and watch, and that's free. So wallstreetprep.com is the ultimate destination for getting prepared.
Okay, great.
Going to financial services.
Wonderful. We'll include links in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/55 to Wall Street Prep, Arkady's book, and the other links mentioned earlier in the show. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Arkady and me for our 55th episode. Arkady, I don't think I thank you. Let me thank you, first of all. And if you found this episode valuable, please share the good word. We have made it really easy for you to do so. Just go to info.exhibit.com/love. There's a pre-populated tweet that you can send to your Twitter followers, or simply copy and paste it into a Facebook or LinkedIn update. And thanks in advance for doing so. And if you have a question to share, please do so at info.exhibit.com/55 or by sending an email to questions@exhibit.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Mission Straight Talk, produced by Exhibit, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.